This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello everybody and welcome to our last podcast before the convention. My name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And today we are going to be speaking with 8 different individual presenters that are part of the International Convention. Ryan and I interviewed some of these together, but Ryan, I was not here for some of them.
To fly solo.
You did. You did a wonderful job, by the way.
Thank you, Beau.
Awesome work. All right, so sit back, relax, and enjoy.
And joining us now is distinguished Toastmaster and accredited speaker, author and business speaker, Johnny Campbell, the Transition Man. Welcome, Johnny.
Welcome, Johnny.
Hey, well, hey, guys. Glad to be here with you today.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. Johnny, we spoke once before, back in 2009 in Mashantucket, Connecticut. You were a presenter at the International Convention then, and you're presenting again in Las Vegas.
Yes, I am. Looking forward to it.
That's great. What is the topic of your presentation for the 2011 International Convention?
This presentation will be called The Accredited Secrets Revealed, How to Become an Accredited Speaker and Build Your Speaking Business.
Wow. That's a different topic.
Yeah, pretty targeted market. There are only 60 accredited speakers still to this day, or are there a few more now?
Oh, no. Actually, at this point, we still only have 60 accredited speakers in the world right now.
Mm. Wow.
Hmm. So, but of course, you're not going to be doing this session only for those who are already accredited speakers, but to share with folks how that designation can help them and that experience can help them launch a speaking business. Is that right?
Right. Oh, no, it's not just for accredited. It's right. For everyone. Right. This program is for anyone out there in our world of Toastmasters who has a desire to, one, become an accredited speaker, but also if they want to turn their passion into a message and go out and become a professional speaker and earn a living from it, the road to accredited is also the same road to becoming a professional speaker. So anyone that wants to be a professional speaker, this is the session to attend.
Okay.
Very good.
And what has that designation done for you, Johnny?
Well, what it's done is it's given me in the marketplace a unique position, because Toastmasters is so recognized in the marketplace as a place for communication skills and leadership that clients and customers notice that, well, this person, if they're being endorsed by Toastmasters, they've obviously reached a certain level of proficiency in their communication mm-hmm. skills. So that totally separates me in the marketplace even from my membership in the National Speakers Association. So this designation really gives you a separation between other speakers.
Gotcha. So I could see you using this title, for example, if somebody's interviewing you to give a lecture and they say, you know, we're thinking about you, Johnny, but there's also this other guy named Bill, and he's pretty good too. You say, you know what, is Bill an accredited speaker? And they're going to say, no, Bill is not. And you could say, well, I am, and you got the job.
That's absolutely correct, because the power is in the third-party endorsement. It's just not me saying, oh, I'm a great speaker.
Uh-huh.
I have an international organization saying, we have only 60 that we would deem to accredit, give an accreditation to. So we put our stamp of approval on this person. So that gives me just such more credibility with a client because of that.
Right. And there are more world champions of public speaking than there are accredited speakers, aren't there?
Yes, what's quite fascinating, yes, there actually is. There's more world champions and accredited, because the accredited speaker is a designation that is given out upon a person showing a high level of proficiency in their communication skills. So it's not a competition. It's a audition and a demonstration.
So, Johnny, in your presentation, obviously, you'll be talking about the accredited speaker program and the process. In addition to that, are you going to spend some time specifically talking about how you can build your business as a speaker once you have that designation?
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to talk about how you can build it actually before the accredited and after you become an accredited. But I'll really talk about how Toastmasters can take their message. In other words, when I built my business, my first speech was built on the first 10 speeches of the manual. Mm. I used those 10 speeches to construct my first paid keynote address. So the Toastmasters that are going to attend this session already have the blueprint. They just need to understand how things fit together to help them build their message and then build their business. Because the accredited speaker is such a, it's a definitely a tough program to get through. There will be always a few who are actually able to make it through, but everyone in that room has the opportunity to become a professional speaker if they learn the core competencies to building a successful business. Mm-hmm. The accredited speaker is almost kind of like the cherry on top. You can build a business. I spoke for 7 years as a professional speaker inside of Toastmasters and across the country before I became an accredited speaker. So I was busy speaking, building my business, and this came along in the journey. So absolutely, they should still be come to the session. You'll learn about being a professional speaker, and you'll also learn about the accreditation program of being an accredited speaker.
Okay. Sounds fascinating. Now, Johnny, when I introduced you, I referred to you as the transition man. And of course, it wasn't really fair for me to do that without explaining to our audience that title and why you are called the transition man. So could you do that for us, please?
Well, yes, the transition man comes from, I spent over 10 years in the insurance industry as a claims adjuster, was part of 5 downsizes and mergers. During that time, my job was to help people deal with the transitional period as we went through the big merger, and I was a trainer. And I told people, well, a lot of people do not like change. So I said, well, don't look at it as change. Look at it as a state of transition, and I'm your transition man. And that's how I got the name the transition man. And after a while, it stuck in the speaking world because I really started showing people a path to their own personal success or a path for them to achieve their goals, which is to become a professional speaker. And it's all a state of transition, and I was showing people the journey now.
That's fantastic. So tell us a little bit more about what your business looks like today as a professional speaker.
Well, what's interesting is that I still speak on the subject of change. I also talk on the subject of conflict resolution, how to deal with difficult people in the workplace, because people are always going through massive amounts of change. Mm-hmm. So I have an honor of speaking on those topics, but also I do presentations on social media as well. So I do a lot of talks on Facebook and how you can use it to build and grow your business. And I've had a lot of great success with growing my business through Facebook, and I've even developed some applications that professionals can use to build their business as well with my partners here in Chicago, Illinois. And so those are the three things I do. Talk about Facebook, change, and conflict resolution skills.
All right. And nice. Where, Johnny, can people find out more information about you?
They can simply go to www.transitionman.com. Upper left side, there's an opt-in box where they can sign up for my newsletter, or they can just send me an email note after hearing this. And if they want a special speaker report, send me an email note at johnny@transitionman.com and put in the subject line, show me the money, and I'll send you a report on making money as a speaker.
All right. You take care, Johnny.
Thanks, Johnny.
All right. All righty. You guys too.
Bye.
Bye. Byron T. Embry is joining Bo and I on the show now. He is the CEO and founder of Closing Remarks LLC, a premier leadership development and communications organization. Byron joined us back in 2009 in Mashantucket, Connecticut, on the podcast. He was an international speech contest contestant that year. And Byron, it's a pleasure to welcome you back to the show today.
Welcome, Byron.
Guys, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Our pleasure. So, Byron, for our listeners who are not familiar with your background, do you want to give us a brief sketch of your background and how you ended up getting into speaking? I know you have a very unique story in that regard.
Well, sure. I grew up in Kentucky, played baseball for 12 years professionally. I pitched with the Atlanta Braves, the Kansas City Royals, and the Seattle Mariners. I think one of the unique things is growing up with the speech impediment. It was something that plagued me for years, seeing every speech pathologist and nearly every expert, and nothing really did the trick. And kind of as I got older, things started to smooth out a little bit with communication and whatnot, and I got into Toastmasters, and I'll never forget visiting my first club, and I was asked to do a table talk. I almost had a heart attack. It was one of those things that was revealed to me that my handicap turned around to be my greatest asset. And so through that, I began to communicate to larger audiences, started the company, of course, Closing Remarks. And then baseball, of course, I was a closer coming in the ballgame the ninth inning and then remarking. So I just kind of threw the two together. And what I do now is, as an international keynote speaker, I travel the globe speaking at big conferences and corporate events and leading America in that regard.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Good story.
Byron, you rocked the stage in Connecticut 2 years ago, and I have to admit, when I first heard you were going to be one of the presenters this year, I thought immediately that you're going to be one of the communications presenters, but you're actually doing a presentation on the leadership track, which isn't too surprising, I guess, based on the company that you run. Could you give us a sneak peek into what you're going to be speaking about in Las Vegas, starting with the title of your session?
Sure. I'm going to be doing leadership assassination. It's one of those things, guys, that I've noticed a lot in leadership is when there's an effective leader, there's always an assassination attempt. Now, what I mean by that, it's not in the literal sense. Mm-hmm. Not the literal bullet, but it's the ones that are shot at our character, the ones that are shot at our integrity, and the ones that are shot at our intelligence that typically do the damage. And what I want to do here is prepare leaders for that assassin. And, you know, the kind of saying goes, if there's not an assassination tip on our character, on our leadership, and our integrity, then our mission is not big enough. If you notice, a lot of the leaders that have been assassinated through our history, it wasn't nothing against the leader as much as it was the mission. Folks want to stop the mission. And I define great leadership as not what you accomplish, rather than who tries to stop you from accomplishing it. And that's what I identify as great leadership. So in Vegas, what I'm going to plan to do is design a plan for leaders to think about and adapt to avoid those assassination attempts.
So you're going to give out figurative bulletproof jackets.
Right, exactly. And I think that's important. And one of the things that I want to do in that, well, let me back up. The big thing in communication with large audiences that I found is taking something that we know and use it as an analogy for something that we don't quite understand. Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, what I want to do is take apart the story of Three Little Pigs. The Three Little Pigs paint a vivid, clear picture of what I want to communicate here. You've got three leaders. One builds out of hay, lack of integrity. One builds out of stick, who was so insecure by his weaknesses that he never embraced his strength. And then one that built out of bick, who invested in preparation. No matter what you build your leadership out of, if you're effective, there will be a wolf. And when the wolf's not happy, nobody's happy. Of course, as you know in the story, the wolf uses pressure. And I define pressure as having the consequences of your failures be paid by everybody else. So if there's a pressurized situation and we're the only one paying for it, that's not pressure. Pressure
right.
is when everyone else has to pay for the failure. And I'm going to go through the mental makeup and kind of the leadership tendencies of each leader and the agenda of the wolf, of the assassin. And so we can kind of see how that plays out in our everyday lives.
Gotcha. So as a participant of this session of yours, when I come out of this event, what do you want me thinking or feeling?
When you walk out of leadership with a leadership assassination, you'll be fully aware of those that are around you and maybe their agendas. And what I mean by that, guys, is there are a lot of people who, again, had nothing against you, but they have something against the accountability that you're holding them to for change.
Right.
And because people want to be stuck in their way, they don't want to be accountable to change, the thing they want to try to do is assassinate you. And some of the tricks and some of the things that the quote-unquote assassin that you work with or maybe that works for you, and tactics that they'll try to pull off to assassinate you. So you'll be fully aware of their agenda and fully aware of how to protect yourself, protect your character, protect your integrity, and protect solid, confident leadership as a whole.
So we're going to be looking out for that grassy knoll.
Absolutely. Awesome.
Hey, Byron, this may not be a fair question to spring on you in such a short format interview, but...
What do you kidding? Ryan, that's exactly what we always do.
I know. Well, let's see maybe what you could offer us on this topic. I'm sitting here thinking about the fact that oftentimes when someone's in a leadership position and they're taking some flack, taking some heat. The people are revolting, so to speak. It can be because the leader is doing something very innovative, and the people who are supposed to be following the leader don't like change, and they're resisting that. But couldn't it be the case that the leader truly just is off course? They're maybe blinded to something. They're not realizing the impact that what they're trying to roll out is going to have on people in a negative way. So how do you, if you're the leader and you're taking that heat, how do you know if it's them or if it's me?
I believe that the leader has to be fully aware of the repercussions and the benefits of what they're trying to accomplish. Now, if nobody's on board for this, if nobody is jumping on the train for this, then that leader has to really, really look at and consider what they're really doing. Is that really valid? And I think there are a lot of leaders who are assassinated and should be because of the lack of leadership that they possess. You know, that's one of those situations, gentlemen, where that's not an assassination, that's just bad leadership. And you usually get voted out. Right. You know, so there's a big difference between being assassinated and being impeached. Mm. And I think when it comes to the impeachment, that is something that, that a real leader needs to be able to impeach another leader who's not as competent. And so I kind of hope that answers your question there. There's a big difference between that and assassination and that impeachment. If no one's on board here, if you're getting a lot of flack from everybody, and sometimes you got to look at the flack, for what it really is. And if you can't do that, then you shouldn't be in that position. You know, I'm a big believer that there are leaders, and then there are those who are just put in a leadership position. Because a leadership is a lifestyle, not a habit.
Right. Right. Obviously, you've got quite a bit of depth of experience in this area. Yeah, that was a great answer.
So we'll take your word for it.
Well, great. Yeah. Awesome.
Awesome.
Good stuff.
Before we let you go, where can folks learn more about you?
You can visit me on the web at byronembry.com. You can also friend me on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, and be a part of my blog and video, video blogging and written blog. And, it's probably the best way to follow me, and hopefully I'll be in the town near you.
All right. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, and we'll see you in Vegas.
All right, gentlemen. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Byron.
Bye-bye.
Joining us now is retired Navy captain and nationally recognized leadership expert, Karen Batesel. Karen Batesel, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, Karen.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you with us. Karen, what is the title of your session at the International Convention?
The title of my session is Cockpit Communication Lessons That Work Anywhere.
Okay, so not just the cockpit anywhere. You could even go outside the cockpit and they'll still work. Is that what you're saying?
I'm actually advocating to take these lessons to other places other than the cockpit. I think folks will find, as I have found, that they're actually very useful.
Gotcha. Well, that's a good thing, because I don't think many people find themselves in cockpits these days.
But of course, Karen, you're someone who is no stranger to the cockpit. Do you want to share for us and our listeners a little bit about your aviation background?
Okay, I'd be happy to. It has been my great and good privilege to have served for 30 years in Uncle Sam's Navy, and the first about 17 to 20 of that was in various cockpits. I'm one of the few Navy flyers that had the good luck to fly helicopters, propeller, and jet aircraft, which is pretty unusual, only because of the way the Navy is structured. Usually you get into one of those three pipelines and you sort of stay there. But various circumstances conspired to give me the opportunity to do all three of those things, fly all three of those different platforms, and I actually flew six different models of aircraft. And in the process, learned about the great advantage to using military and aviation principles in everyday communication. So I've got about 2,000-plus military flight hours and a lot of different airplane types, both at land and shipboard base. And I want to thank the American taxpayer for that. It was a great privilege to serve, and I will give back for the rest of my life and never repay the debt I owe to Uncle Sam's Navy for what it taught me.
Great.
So that's where this is coming from.
Karen, when I think of communication in the cockpit, and especially in a combat situation, three words come to mind as the type of communication. Those are clear communication, efficient communication, and accurate communication as three things that would just be absolutely critical in that situation. Am I at all touching upon the direction you see your presentation going, or are you going to take it somehow differently?
Nope, you bet. You're taking it right where I am going with it, and that is, sociologists would call it a high-context communication scenario, and sociologists talk about cultures that have high-context communications or low-context, meaning a word means a word means a word in a high-context situation, and a word can mean a lot of different things in a low-context situation. Aviation, and particularly military aviation, is the ultimate high-context communication environment. And there's some really great takeaways from that that you can use at home, you can use at work, you can use with your kids, with your spouse, at your church, at your club, in your community, that if people just understood the power of them, I think they would really find a great value in it. I sure did. And that's kind of what the whole purpose of my putting this presentation together. I was hoping to share some of that stuff. And it's something that you must learn and practice in the cockpit because, for one thing, we have limited bandwidth. Mm-hmm. You can't just talk as much as you want to. Other people are trying to talk. There's emergencies going on. There are people that have higher priority needs. So you learn how to use words in contexts that are very powerful. So okay. That's where it goes.
Great. And how many of these techniques do you plan on sharing in your, let's say, 50-minute presentation?
I have about five important points to take away from, or key concepts. And you could, if you're interested in communication like all Toastmasters are, you could take any one of these and talk for a week. But I'm not
right.
going to do that. But I'm going to hit the what I would call five good wave tops that still will have pragmatic tools to apply the minute the session is over. This is going to be tool based, so it's going to work. It's going to be very helpful for folks. I hope they have as much fun with it as I have.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Can you perhaps give us one of them, and not really talk about it, but just kind of give us the overview of one of them?
Okay. Well, one of my favorites, and this applies. I spent some time in corporate America too before I started my own business, and this applies not just in the military and in the cockpit, but in business settings as well, and that is for people to have a very good understanding of the difference between a procedure, which has a very specific meaning, that word, mm-hmm. procedure, and the difference between that and a technique, which also has a very specific meaning. I have spent far too much time watching people argue about the difference between those two, and confusing them and using them synonymously when they are very different. They are very different. And we'll spend some time unpacking that. And I think folks will go to their next conflict with a very different framework and a very great ability to cut through the buzz on the frequency and resolve the issue. And that's one of the topic points that we'll hit, is the difference between a procedure and a technique, and they're not the same.
Gotcha. All right.
I don't know about you, Bo, but I'm feeling like, tell me more.
Yeah, I think we'll just have to wait.
Of course, we don't want you to give it all away, Karen.
No.
Okay.
No, I think that's great. Well, Karen, this has been fascinating, and we look forward to meeting you at the 2011 Toastmasters International Convention in beautiful Las Vegas.
I'm looking forward to it, too. I'm hoping. I'm designating $20 to go to the slots and see if I can turn it into more than $20. So that's going to be my goal there, in addition to having fun with fellow Toastmasters.
Gotcha. I got my bag of quarters building up as well. So far, I'm at $16.25, but it's building up there.
All right.
Hey, Karen, for folks who want to learn a little bit more about you before the convention, could you share your website?
You bet. I am at www.truebattleaxe, and that's Axe with an E, TrueBattleAxe.com. And if you Google True Battle Axe, you'll find me as well. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, and the website again, www.TrueBattleAxe.com.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, thank you. It was great to talk to you guys. See you in Vegas.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, thanks, Karen.
And joining us on the show now from his office in Raleigh, North Carolina, is author, speaker, attorney, and business executive, Sandy Costa. Sandy Costa, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you, Ryan. It's great to be here.
It is great to have you with us. Now, Sandy, I understand you are presenting at the International Convention on the Leadership Track. What is the title of your presentation?
Humanity at Work.
Humanity at Work. Well, a lot of our presentations, you hear the title of it and kind of have an idea of what it's about. Yours perhaps is a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for, of an enigma for a title.
Uh-huh.
So can you share with us a little bit about what Humanity at Work is all about?
Absolutely. The title of the talk is also the title of a book that I authored 2 years ago, Humanity at Work, Encouraging Spirit, Achievement, and Truth to Flourish in the Workplace. And it speaks to my concepts of the attributes of great leaders. And when I speak about the attributes of great leaders, Brian, I'm not only speaking about the attributes that leaders have that they use when they have other people in their charge, but these attributes are also important to people so that they can personally succeed and grow as individuals, both in the workplace and without the workplace.
Very good. Now, you were sharing with me before we started the interview here about the fact that your book is grew out of some letters that you wrote to employees over a series of years. Do you want to share a little of that background with us?
Sure. I was the president of a large service organization. By the time I stepped down, we had about 20,000 employees, and I used to write letters to the employees. Most of the letters had a business theme, but they were as much about how to get through the day as how to run the business. And after I stepped down, I started getting notes from employees and also from people I didn't know. And these were actually friends and family of the employees. They had given them the letters, and they had all asked that if I continue to write on different subjects, if I would send them a copy of what I wrote. So I started an emailing list that grew into quite a number of people around the world. And there came a point in time when I wanted to start speaking on the subject, so I thought it would be good to write a book, which I did, which speaks to these subjects and contains about 40 to 45 of the letters that I wrote over the last 14 years.
Very nice. Now, Sandy, do you feel that there's a lack of humanity at work generally?
Well, I think sometimes there's a lack of recognition of it. When I started in the workplace in the early 70s, Ryan, it was interesting. I think most people, to be effective leaders, just had to be technically competent.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember one day sitting at work. I was just out of law school, and my wife had just called and told me that my daughter, who was, I think, 2 at the time, had broke her clavicle. And, of course, I was really upset. She was pushed off the chair by some kid at the nursery school. And my boss just happened to walk by after I got this news, and he stuck his head in the office and said, "Hi, Sandy, how are you today?" And you know what I said? Great. And why did I say great? Because in that day and age, if I sat there and said, "Well, I'm really not having a very good day. My daughter just broke her shoulder. I wish I was home with her rather than being here," I think he would have looked at me like I'd lost my mind.
Right.
Because in those days, really, that wasn't considered part of your job,
mm-hmm.
was being able to take care of and deal with people on more of an emotional and human level. I think today more and more people understand that. But when I speak, it's interesting because I'll get a lot of feedback from people in the audience saying, I usually ask a question on my feedback form, who should hear this talk? And you'd be shocked how many people say, "My boss."
Right. Right. Yeah. In the old days, it was suck it up, Sandy.
That's right. That's exactly
check your
right.
baggage at the door.
Yep.
So, well, thankfully, there are folks like you who are crying out a little bit different rallying cry. But Sandy, as you know, there are going to be other presenters presenting on the leadership track at the International Convention. What do you think will be different about your presentation? Obviously, you don't know what all the other presentations are, but in
right.
general, what's distinctive about your material?
Well, I think what's distinctive is I'm a storyteller by nature,
mm-hmm.
and I will tell lots of stories. And I think what I find is that people easily identify with the stories, and that doesn't mean that they've had a similar occurrence in their lives. But people resonate with stories because there's always some fiber of that story that they find that that pertains to what's happened to them in their lives. And so when I get up and talk about people, for example, I talk about the need for us all to manifest our own reality. I talk about the fact that, by that I mean, it's pretty much how we believe we will act ends up on how we're acting. Mm-hmm. And if we think that we will be successful and people will like us and on and on and on, will that happen all the time, Ryan? No, but it'll happen most of the time. But if we believe we're not well-spoken, we're not attractive, people don't like us, well, good news. That'll happen 100% of the time. Pessimists are never wrong.
Right. Self-fulfilling prophecy.
And that's exactly right. And I go on to point out that, and people are used to this as well, that we sometimes find ourselves in the presence, for example, of people who just reek of negativism. Unfortunately, that's sometimes in our family.
Mm-hmm.
But my advice to people is stay away from those folks. They will suck off your positive energy like a vacuum cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talk on those sorts of subjects. I talk about the need for self-awareness, for example, that people have and how that helps build trusting relationships. I talk about the need for humility and respect and compassion. You don't hear a lot of people talk about compassion in the workplace, but I think it's something that really resonates with people and is understood by them.
Yeah. Well, Sandy, these are obviously all very important topics. How would you hope that me, as an attendee of your presentation or any other Toastmaster at the convention, how will they lead differently as a result of being exposed to the material you're going to share with us?
Well, I think the way that they'll leave is that I do kind of solidify some of the concepts that people think about in when they say to themselves, what do I need to be a good leader? I think they leave with some solid advice on exactly what that is. And I think I give people the permission to be humane, that it's all right to be a person who's compassionate and a person who's respectful and a person who understands that mistakes are made in the workplace. For example, I'll speak about the fact that I think mistakes are usually way overrated. And I'll give examples of that. I'll talk about Christopher Columbus. Golly, he made the greatest mistake in history and he was famous for it.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. That's, mistakes are learning opportunities.
That's exactly right. And sometimes the truth hides behind mistakes. And we need to understand that before we level somebody for making one. And of course, I keep it light, Ryan. I think it's important that we have the ability to laugh at ourselves and some of the things we've done in our lives. And I think when people leave, that they'll leave with some substance and they'll also leave with a pretty good feeling about what they heard.
That sounds great, Sandy. I really look forward to your session. And of course, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the show today.
My pleasure.
For our listeners who'd like to learn more about you, is there a website where they can visit?
There is. My website is www.santocosta.com. And on my website, they can pick up a link to my blog, which I keep pretty current, and I think they might enjoy.
Very good. And is your book available on your website as well, Humanity at
it
Work?
It is.
Okay, great.
And through Amazon as well.
All right. Well, Sandy, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I really look forward to meeting you in person in Las Vegas this August.
It'll be fun. Thanks, Ryan.
All right. Take care, Sandy.
Be well. Bye-bye.
And joining us on the show now is the 2009 world champion of public speaking, Mr. Mark Hunter. Mark, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you very much, Ryan. It's a pleasure to be having a chat.
It is great to speak with you. I understand you are in Brisbane, Australia right now, and it's a one day ahead on the calendar where you are compared to me today.
It is. So. It makes trying to set up conversations interesting.
Absolutely. So, Mark, you and I had the pleasure to meet, at least it was my pleasure to meet you, a couple of years ago, right after you won the 2009 World Champion of Public Speaking. And just first want to ask, what have you been up to since then?
Ryan, it's been quite an awesome trip. I think when I reflect on the timing of the win, because I did compete several times beforehand, but the timing of the win in 2009 was perfect for me, or it turned out to be perfect because I was able to retire from my full-time job as a school principal and move into my retirement position. I started a business back in 2001, which was based around coaching. So now that I have retired. The win has enabled me to visit a number of districts and areas in the Toastmasters world, which has been an absolute pleasure. Certainly, I learned a number of things. One, that we are consistent in our delivery of professional development for individuals around the world, no matter where we are. And there's an excitement about it that seems to be apparent throughout the world. So I've been doing that. I have also been working for a number of companies and groups, currently working with Australia's Olympians to help them develop their keynote speeches, because I think they have a need sometimes to supplement their income by doing keynotes at functions. And that's been an absolute pleasure to work with those people who are quite committed to their sporting prowess and to assist them in their speaking prowess. I've been doing some work on coaching and leadership, and I've spoken at a number of conferences outside Toastmasters as well, which I thoroughly enjoyed. So retirement has taken has allowed me to do all these things and given me an opportunity to work where I want to be.
Right.
And have some flexibility.
Yeah. It sounds like you've been a busy man the past couple of years. That's great.
I have, yes.
Yeah. So, Mark, I assumed when I knew that you were going to be presenting at the 2011 convention in Las Vegas, I assumed as the world champion of public speaking, well, of course he's going to be on the communications track, but no, you are speaking on the leadership track. And what is your session? What's the title of your session?
I think the title is On Life's Journey, Get Lost.
On Life's Journey, Get Lost. And break that open a little bit for us. What's that about?
I think primarily it's about the concept of whether or not as a leader, and perhaps as a communicator or a Toastmaster, but in the context of this presentation as a leader, whether you want to remain a tourist and travel safe roads and predictable roads and sure roads and well-defined roads, or do you want to take the opportunity to be an explorer and get lost a little? And whilst you're an explorer, of course, the parameters of your journey and the opportunities of your journey are different when you compare those with the opportunities that come from being a tourist moving along a predictable line. So I want to examine those. Mm-hmm. I also want to examine what it is to be a leader. So sometimes you have to let go of the definition of yourself as a leader and get lost a little, because sometimes we're comfortable with our own definitions. And I've got a couple of strategies that I want to share with participants about how they might be able to do that. And the other element is, or one of the other elements is, how we manage our headspace. I think if you went to a self-help section in a bookstore, you'd find 400 publications and another 400 DVDs on managing your mind. But I have a way, I suppose, of viewing that's slightly different, and the concept might work for, well, I hope it works for participants. But, you know, my job is to share ideas and learnings that I have come across and developed over my time as a leader.
Right.
And in an effort to hopefully make our leaders and our Toastmasters organization more efficient and more effective.
Very good. Now, Mark, is this presentation that you're going to be giving in Las Vegas one that you've given before, or is this completely new content that hasn't been heard before, or
the content has been developing over time, Ryan.
Yeah.
So I have run it at two other places to get a sense of how it works. I mean, I spend an enormous amount of time preparing these things in an effort to make them work. So I like to give them a run beforehand. I had the opportunity to run a component of it while Gary Schmidt was out here for District 69. So that enables me to reflect on how I'm doing it and what I can do to make it work better for the audience.
Very good. Very good. Mark, I really like that concept you talked about a few moments ago, comparing the difference between a tourist and an explorer. And as you were talking about an explorer, you mentioned the willingness to take a risk to get lost. And I think that's interesting. If you think of it in a leadership context, you think of the leader as someone who always knows where they're going and is always in control. Yet by taking a leadership role, it sounds like you're saying we need to take the risk to be a little bit clueless and charter uncharted territories.
Perhaps not to be clueless, but to certainly move into uncharted territories.
Right.
If you're a leader of an organization or a group, as we have in Postmasters, sometimes we have to reflect upon who and what we are as a leader. And sometimes that might mean we step outside the comfort zone or the tourist realm, the realm of the tourist, to be an explorer. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, we're all on a bit of a journey, and this is a leadership journey. And I think we've got a better chance of understanding ourselves as a leader if we take a few risks and perhaps change or reflect on our current strategies and change them to suit the needs of the organization or the group we're leading.
Right. Mark, what would you say is your dream for the Toastmasters who are going to be attending your session? How would you like them to be thinking, feeling, behaving differently after experiencing your session?
Being an educator, I'm not necessarily one who stands on the belief, or should I say sits on the belief, as I do, that I'm there to give answers.
Mm-hmm.
My focus is to provide a number of views of this concept of leadership that will provide participants with an opportunity to reflect on who they are. I'll give them also access to a number of tools that they can use, and that's part of the presentation, so that ultimately, upon reflection and participating in a number of activities, they might be or potentially will be better leaders. So that's what I'd like them to be able to come away from the session with some concepts and ideas on how they can reflect on who they are so that they are ultimately better leaders in our organization.
Well, it sounds like something we can all use, and sounds like you've got a lot of wisdom stored up from many years of experience that we can all benefit from. Mark, I have to ask you, have you been to Las Vegas before, or is this going to be uncharted territory for you?
I have explored Las Vegas twice before.
Wow.
Ryan, I find it a fascinating place. Those who are not Toastmasters, in other words, partners, will find plenty to do if and when they find themselves, you know, not participating in the program. So I think it's a great place to have a conference, a great place to have fun, and certainly fun is an element that I want to include in my presentation as well.
Fantastic. Now, Mark, do you have a website where people could go to learn more about you in advance of the conference?
I do. All the W's, markhunter.com.au, Ryan.
markhunter.com.au.
.au, yeah.
Very good. Mark, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the show, and can't wait to see you again and say hello in Las Vegas.
I look forward to it. I also look forward to meeting up with many of the Toastmasters that I've had the privilege of meeting from around the Toastmasters world, and I look forward also to having a chat with you, Ryan, and catching up with where you're at and how things are going.
Sounds great, Mark. We'll see you then. You take care.
Okay, cheers. Right.
Bye.
Bye.
And joining us now from Kansas City, Missouri, is author and motivational speaker Kathy Newton. Kathy, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Hello, Ryan. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure to have you with us. Now, Kathy, I know you are one of the presenters on the leadership track for the International Convention in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yes, I am.
What is the title of your session?
Innovation in Full Swing: How to Flip Change Resistance into a Change-Ready Mindset.
Very good. A lot of stuff crammed into that title. And Kathy, I know you have something special prepared for us. You have a 1-minute commercial. And so why don't we use that to kick things off and get our listeners an idea of what they're going to be able to learn at your session.
Great. Okay, all of you Toastmasters out there planning to attend convention, what if you could accelerate your performance, enhance your job satisfaction, and boost your reputation by having a personal strategy for change readiness? Well, you can expect those outcomes in this session, Innovation in Full Swing. Innovation, you see, is twofold. It's the ability to create new ideas that will drive technology, new industries, economic growth, and more jobs. And three, cheers for those brave, creative minds. But those new ideas create change in the way we do our jobs and live our lives. So innovation means the ability for all of us to be change ready. So in this session, you will recognize the signs of change resistance, understand why people naturally resist change, identify specific steps to help others take the risk to change. Most importantly, identify specific steps that will help you be change ready. So don't hunker down in change resistance when it could affect your performance, job satisfaction, and reputation. Get up, get out, and get in the swing of change readiness, making you more valuable to your work team and to your employer. So if you could benefit from a power charge in change readiness, come to convention in Las Vegas. Join me in this session, Innovation in Full Swing, and just think of the great results you will get.
I'm thinking of it already, Kathy.
Good.
Great stuff. Kathy, I want to pick up on one of the threads in your little mini commercial there. Especially as Toastmasters, I think we would all say that we want to change, we want to improve, we want to grow. But as you mentioned, there is this resistance to change. Why do you think we all have that, this resistance, even despite our best intentions? When it comes right down to it, when it means making changes, it's so darn difficult, isn't it?
It is. We want the status quo. We cling to the status quo. Growth is always risky business. And I think it's that risk factor that gets in the way. And if we break it down, there's really three things. You're not knowing, you're not able, and you're not willing. See, you don't know how this change is going to benefit you. You think that you're not able, you don't have the skills and that learning, you know, that's risky business, that's stepping out and learning new things. Or then it's just an attitude thing. I'm not a good team player.
Right.
So those are the three things I'm going to focus on: benefits, skills, and attitudes.
Okay, good.
And how that is resistance, but how that also will help in flipping your mindset to change readiness.
Hmm. I like that concept of flipping your mindset, because it makes me feel like, almost as it implies, that there's some switch in my brain that if I could just get it flipped, if I could just change my thinking, maybe.
The light bulb factor, yeah. The light bulb comes on, you get it.
Right.
And it's easy to make the flip.
Right. As a result of Toastmasters attending your session, do you expect jobs are actually going to be created?
Oh, I think that people are going to be empowered to be ready.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole thing. We need to be ready. We need to be ready, willing, and able to make things happen.
Yeah, I can just, from my own life experientially, so often I get up in the morning and I think, okay, these are the three things that I want to get done today. And then I get surprised that an email rose into my inbox, or that I get a phone call and that there's something else, pulling for my attention. And it's sort of like, did you really think you weren't going to get any other requests or anything wasn't going to pop up today? But it's that change resistance that, no, but this is what I was going to do today. So do you think you're going to be able to help me get over that issue?
Yes.
All right.
I think there's that power of intention.
Mm-hmm.
Making those intentions and being able to always come back to where do I want to go? What do I want to accomplish?
Very good. Cool. So, Kathy, as I asked another presenter, what's your dream for the Toastmasters who will attend your session? When they walk out of your session and go back to their clubs, go back to their towns and cities and workplaces and homes, How do you want them to be thinking or feeling or behaving differently as a result of having attended your session?
Because they know they have the power to deal with whatever comes, whatever change happens, because they understand benefits, skills, and attitudes. They've made that flip. They understand why that factors into change resistance and how that factors into change readiness.
Very good. Kathy, I am looking forward to having you flip my mind in Las Vegas.
We'll flip together.
Right. For any of our listeners who'd like to learn more about you before August, the convention in Las Vegas, do you have a website?
I do. It is kathynewton.com. That's Kathy with a C, Newton, just like Fig Newton, kathynewton.com.
Very good. Well, I encourage our listeners to check it out. Kathy, I look forward to meeting you in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And hopefully what happens in Las Vegas won't stay in Las Vegas. We want to bring all this great stuff home. Exactly. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us on the show, Kathy.
Ryan, you are delightful. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you in Las Vegas. And joining us on the show now from Phoenix, Arizona, is Linda Henley Smith. Linda, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. Linda, you are presenting on the leadership track. What is the title of your session?
My session is Lose the Excuses and Live a Butt-Kickin' Life. And butt is the B-U-T, that kind of butt, the excuses that we all have for not doing things that we really want to do.
You are an author and speaker. How long have you been presenting on this and related topics? What's your background? How'd you get into all of this?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have been doing this for about 18, 19 years, and my whole life I have used humor. I was a teacher in one of my other lives, and I have been a performer and on the stage for most of my life in various capacities. So I realize that people really do learn better when they are laughing and when they are feeling that they are being challenged in a fun kind of a way and possibilities are being opened to them. So through a course of things that would take way too long to explain, I just kind of ended up doing this as a sideline, and that it ultimately exploded into a business, and I began to write books, I began to write training manuals and go in and train in corporate settings as well as in educational settings, and it just kind of blossomed and mushroomed, and here I am. As we all contribute to what I call global whining, I can do that, I would do it, but I would do this, but... And we all need to kind of kick our butts every now and then and decide if we are going to be a victim or a victor. And I would like to say we're smarter than sock puppets, and so we don't have to have other people give us permission. Sometimes we need to give ourselves permission.
Mm. I'm wondering, Linda, how do you, if you're perhaps reflecting on your own life or maybe counseling someone else, how do you tell the difference between what you would call an excuse and what I'll call maybe legitimate justification for avoiding something? Is there a fine line there?
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up because I do address that. There are some legitimate reasons, and there are different standards by which to judge those compared to, you know, each individual has their own standards. But if you have absolutely no physical incapability of doing something, and you might realize that you have to take a different track. You may not be able to do it in the way that you would normally accomplish that particular task or try that particular feat, but there are ways around it. If you have no physical limitations, and if there is any possibility that you are just not hanging out and not doing it because of fear, then that is an excuse. We live in fear storms, and one of the chapters of my new book is about interference, and the F-E-A-R is how I spell the interference. Because most of the time, why we don't try for things is because we are afraid to fail, because we have had past experiences, we feel guilty for trying to do something nice for ourselves. And so those are all excuses. Obviously, there are physical limitations and there are monetary restraints, but if we can find a way around those and we're still not trying, that means it's an excuse. A lot of times people use age, for instance. I'm too old. I would do it, but I'm too old. And my answer to that is, how old are you in spirit? A lot of us get locked into this where our physical age, the age of our body, we set as a limitation. Well, if you think of your body as a shell in which your spirit lives, how old is your spirit? And when you think about it in those terms, there are no limitations. And you may have to do it, as I said, in a kind of a circuitous path. But I think it bears thinking that a lot of times the things that we have deemed as legitimate excuse or reasons are literally excuses.
Right. Guilty as charged, Linda.
I think we all are.
Yeah. Linda, I know that I believe that humor is going to be a part of your presentation. And I have to say, by looking at your website before this call, I saw you wearing some outrageous, I'll call them outfits or accessories. could you maybe comment a little bit on how you expect the tone and tenor of your presentation to be?
I always believe in having a good time. I think that if you're not having fun, you're not really utilizing all of your senses and your ability to really grasp concepts. I have a lot of props. I use music. It's a very interactive and, I dare say, entertaining program. Laughter is absolutely the best medicine. It's a trite but very true phrase. It's the medicine with no bad side effects. And if you can laugh about something, you can deal with it. You can find an answer. And so there is going to be a lot of laughter. There's a lot of spontaneity that goes on in these programs. And I always encourage people to just come prepared and be 5 years old again and be willing to entertain new possibilities and to learn and to laugh.
All right, so I'm going to have to release my inner elf if I attend your session.
Yes, you are. Your elf must be released.
I'm ready to take that challenge. Linda, your session description also refers to embracing the concepts of enlightenment. How's my elf going to help me find enlightenment?
Your elf is going to help you find this because when we are young and we are 5 years old, for instance, we don't drag all of our past into our present. Now, obviously, when you're five, you haven't had a huge, long past, but we need to embrace that same idea of dealing with a situation, getting angry at it if you have to, and then letting it go. Don't let it define you. Don't let it determine and dictate how you're going to live the rest of your life. Deal with a situation and realize that if you have a problem, you're a person with a problem. You're not a problem with a person attached. As we get older, we keep adding on layers and layers of past failures and excuses and guilt and woe, and we throw ourselves major pity parties. And so when you're putting yourself into a frame of being a child again, you've let all of that go and you're off to the next adventure. A child just goes from one adventure to the next, and we don't know limitations when we're that age. Nobody has told us that we can't do something. And 99% of the time, I do believe, when we're adults, we think that being grown up means that we have to groan all the time, and we put these excuses on ourselves based on past experiences. So that's how you let your inner elf come out. You just put all of your grown-up thoughts out of your head, use the wisdom that you have attained, but put it into that five-year-old logic.
Mm. Sounds compelling, Linda. I'm certainly looking forward to your session in Las Vegas, looking forward to meeting you. For folks who are listening at home who'd like to find out a little bit more about you before the convention in Las Vegas, could you share your website?
Absolutely. I would really invite everyone to come out to my website and take a look around. It is www.lindahenley-smith.com.
Perfect. Linda Henley-Smith, thank you for joining us on the show today. Appreciate your time and look forward to meeting you in Las Vegas.
Well, I am so looking forward to being there and meeting you, and thank you for your time.
You bet. You take care.
I will. You also. Bye-bye.
And joining us on the show now is keynote speaker, author, comedian, and, oh, by the way, 2001 world champion of public speaking, Darren LaCroix. Welcome, Darren.
Welcome, Darren.
Hey, happy to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us, Darren. So you are one of our educational presenters at the International Convention. What's the topic of your session, Darren?
I'm going to be talking about speaking outside of Toastmasters for fun, profit, and most importantly, club building. People who are Toastmasters, a lot of people aspire to be professional speakers, but whether you do or whether you don't, no one comes to Toastmasters to be a better speaker at Toastmasters. So I believe one of the best growth things that you can do is to speak outside of Toastmasters. Take what you learn from Toastmasters and get outside the club. It stretches you, and you realize that, honey, we are not in Kansas anymore. It's not as, not everyone is going to jump up and applaud you every time.
Right.
They're not gonna allow you to go over 5 or 7 minutes. You speak at a Rotary Club, you're not done right on time, they'll get up and walk away. They don't care if you're still talking.
Right. Wow. Yeah, I've had that experience before. That's a good point, because in Toastmasters, a lot of people do speak about Toastmasters, and you know what? You're preaching to the choir here. Take that speech outside. Exactly. and bring in some more, get some more butts in the chairs, as they say.
Well, I believe that the goal really for everybody should be to become world class, to be a phenomenal presenter. So whether you want to do it professionally or you want to just be persuasive because it's part of your job, or you just want to be persuasive to your boss or your coworkers, to be, you know, there's only one champion every year, and to have that as your goal, then it's either a win or a loss. If your goal is to become world class, to be at that level, the side effect is you may win, you may not. But bottom line is you have a career, you'd be a better communicator, and probably, you know, do more, just have more fun and do better at whatever passion you pursue or whatever work career you have. So I believe it should be to be world class. Side effect, competition makes you better. But don't make that the be-all, end-all. There are many world champions who still work their day jobs. There's nothing wrong with that. And there are many people who never won the world championship who dramatically out-earn the world champions. So it's not a be-all, end-all.
Right.
Now, do you feel that competing regularly in the international speech contest is a way to help you become world-class because of all the feedback you get along the way?
Well, not just the feedback, but, and I agree wholeheartedly, not just the feedback, but the pressure that you're under, forcing you to become better. I learned more in the 77 days that I was in the highest level of competition after I won the what's called the semifinals, now going to the championship, because I became a better student. It wasn't about, like, you know, ooh, how do I impress the judges? It was like, how do I get my message across? And having a great coach like Mark Brown, fellow world champion, you know, was the difference between making it and not making it, between becoming great or not. So it was that pressure of the competition that I believe if everyone competes with the intent of getting your message across and not taking home a piece of plastic, you know, nobody hires me because I have a 35-pound piece of Lucite on my desk at home. They hire me because of what I can do with an audience.
Hey, Darren, I had an idea for you. That trophy that you have, you should make it into a necklace.
I was thinking an earring, actually.
Earring, yeah. It'll turn your presentation into a sideshow. Freak show.
I really think that we have so much value that we gain from Toastmasters, and some people, I love them. I love Toastmasters. It's been in forever. I've been in since 1994, but there's some people who, they're the king of the club, but yet they've never spoken outside of Toastmasters, and that's, honestly, that's a shame, because you're not stretching yourself if you're not speaking outside of Toastmasters. But a lot of people don't know what to say. Well, what do I say? Where do I go? Well, that's what I'm going to answer in my session. I'm going to give people a game plan of exactly what they can talk about, a formula, if you will, using your own stories. I'm not going to tell you what to say, but the stories that you can use and how that can convince people to go check out a Toastmasters club. You know, if you can't get somebody, you know, if you don't have CDs, you don't have a book or anything like that, that's fine. No worries. We all started without anything. But if you can't get somebody to have interest or want to know more about Toastmasters, by the time you're done speaking, you're never going to get paid. You're obviously not persuasive, but all that means is there's just something else you have to learn. So there's such a good value to speaking outside of Toastmasters. And bottom line is, if we could make a plan that every single club, 12,000 of them around the world, if every single club could have just one club member speak just one time per month, outside of their club talking about Toastmasters, that would literally change the scope of Toastmasters.
Yeah,
I'm
sure
so
would.
Tired of hearing about Toastmasters as the greatest kept secret. That's because we're not talking about it. It's a speech about being better.
Right.
Am I getting my point across?
Oh, you are. You nailed it.
Loud and clear.
Let me ask you this, Darren. One of my questions would be, where do I go and who do I speak to? I'm sure you have a whole list of suggestions, but why don't you just give us one, just one of any places to go to speak to tell more about Toastmasters?
Well, the bottom line and the simplest answer, just to get started, is a local service club, a Rotary Club, a Lions Club, a Kiwanis Club. They're looking for speakers.
Mm-hmm.
Every single week they need a speaker, and since they have no budget, they're not getting the greatest speakers. And bottom line is, it's either going to be you or Bob talking about his fishing trip to Alaska, you know, the third time. They don't want to hear that again.
Right.
So, but what we have to do is we have to, A, find out who is the person who does that. Just like we have an educational or a membership chair at Toastmasters or the educational person who keeps us in line. Well, they have an educational person as well, say at a Rotary Club. There is a person who has a responsibility to fill a slot every week and has no budget to do it. Duh.
Yeah.
So all they need is somebody who can take the subject. Not, hey, I'm going to come in and talk about Toastmasters. The subject that's helpful for them. So meaning how you can give a better presentation without fear, or how to be more confident and put together a better presentation, or something to that effect that's you-focused for the type of person who's in the room. So Rotary Club, there's a lot of business people. So they need help with communication. You solve their problems. That's what we do from in front of the room. We help people solve problems. So we contact that person. If we don't, you know, if you know anybody in a Rotary Club, if not, go online. It's very easy to find. And you speak at one Rotary Club, you get a testimonial from that person, and you can probably easily get into another Rotary Club the next town over. There's so many organizations that have no budget. We could be the answer to what they're looking for.
And the pay is right, too.
The nice thing about no pay is it's low pressure as well.
That's right.
Right.
They're getting what they pay for.
They have low expectations.
Right.
All right. Good stuff, Darren. This sounds great. And this is going to be, of course, in August in the beautiful state of Nevada, city of Las Vegas, Hotel of Bally's. Did
Amen.
I get all that right?
You got it right.
All right.
So.
Wonderful.
Make sure you drink lots of water. It is actually, I checked, it is actually going to be 9 degrees cooler than the surface of the sun.
And Darren, you would know because you are from Las Vegas now. You're living there the past how long?
I am. I am a not-so-native Nevadan.
Right. For a couple years now.
I love it here. I don't have to shovel, and I have no mosquitoes. That's why I live here.
Amen to that.
That's a winning combination.
And by the way, quick little trivia. I know people know about my mantra, stage time, stage time, stage time. The man from Boston, the Boston comedian, I know you guys are Boston boys, the Boston comedian, Vinny Favorito, who was the person who taught me stage time, stage time, stage time, actually has his own one-man show at the Flamingo, which is literally right next door to Bally's. So 7 nights a week. Check him out. The man who taught me. He's awesome.
Awesome.
Great.
I'm writing that down.
And Darren, for folks who want to learn a little bit more about you before the convention, where would you suggest they go?
Well, my website is www.darrenlacroix.com. But what I'd really suggest is if you're thinking about coming to the convention, I just posted 2 videos on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/stagetime. And it's the top 10 reasons to come to the Toastmasters International Convention. And it's funny. And then another one, the top 10 things to do when you get here before or after the convention that most tourists don't know about. There's really so much to Vegas. And, you know, everybody knows the Strip, but, you know, there's zip lines here, indoor skydiving. I love nature, so I go to Red Rock, really cool canyon, here in Vegas. So there's so much to do. So I made the videos funny, but informative as well. And there's a special appearance by our Toastmasters president, Pat Johnson. So kind of cool. She got involved when I was over in Portugal and met her. So check it out, youtube.com/stagetime.
All right. Darren, it's been a pleasure. We look forward to seeing you in Vegas.
All right. Thank you, guys, and thank you for what you do. This is a great service to Toastmasters, and I hope people appreciate all the time, energy, and effort that you guys put in making this happen.
It doesn't happen
without effort. So thank you.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, Darren.
Take care.
All right. Let me know. I'll get you guys tickets to Vinny. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Night, guys.
Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. Bo, you looking forward to convention?
Oh, I am.
As I am. I know you booked your travel already. For our listeners who haven't yet, there is still time to register for the convention. Just go to the Toastmasters.org homepage and click on the 2011 convention link right on the homepage.
And we will see you all at the convention in Las Vegas. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.